And there was a doctor there from one of the really top hospitals here in Boston. And he continued to call all of this an overdose. And I said to him, I said, with all due respect, you can't do that because my son did not overdose on
Correct.
marijuana. He was given it by someone he knew. The person told him he got it at the dispensary, which obviously he did not. And then when
Correct.
I got the medical examiner report, which I actually even keep a copy on my phone, which is terrible, it showed fentanyl and xylazine.
I'm Flint Anderson, founder of Pain, Parents and Addicts in Need. I've been in recovery since 2001, and there isn't much I don't know about recovery. And my mission is to constantly tell the truth about addiction, to make the realities of addiction, recovery, and drug culture known, and to drive awareness and advocate change that ultimately saves lives.
And I'm Jason LaChance, a certified recovery coach with a passion for speaking with others and sharing their knowledge to help others seek recovery and maintain long-term sobriety. And this is the Don't Hide the Scars podcast, presented by Pain, Parents and Addicts in Need. Welcoming to the Don't Hide the Scars podcast, Miss Paula Young. Thank you for joining Flint Anderson and myself, Jason LaChance.
Welcome, Paula.
Thank you so much for having me. Just to give everyone a little bit of background, Achieve Greatness was actually started by my son, Andrew. He started it 3 years prior to his unexpected death. He actually was a basketball coach. So yeah. He started Achieve Greatness to bring inner city kids who couldn't afford basketball camps, as we all know how much they are, want to have one-on-one trainings. And it became kind of like a mentoring session for him, and he loved it, and the kids loved him. He was Coach Andrew to them, or Coach Drew, as they called him. So when we unfortunately got that terrible call, my son was living in Annapolis, and I live here in Massachusetts, so the local police here in my area came to tell us that they had found my son. He was at his apartment complex. He had gone for a walk, and I had actually been texting him, and they found him under a gazebo. And I, you know, when people talk about triggers, and we'll get into that, I can no longer be around a gazebo because it just triggers me. So when we got the call from the Annapolis Police Department to let us know what happened, obviously, it was, as my husband would tell you, it's literally a bomb that went off in our home. And that's exactly what's happened. And I think many other parents can justifiably say the same thing. It's 50% of you that is now gone that will never come back. And that's one of the things that we battle with, is many folks who do not understand the path and journey of grieving parents expect us to be who we were prior. That person is gone. So what we do is we try to turn our tragedy, as is stated in Achieve Greatness, into purpose. And that's exactly what we decided to do. So what I'm doing here in Massachusetts and throughout the country is I'm speaking on behalf of the voiceless. I'm speaking with other parents. I am doing many organizations and talking about this crisis, because although people know about fentanyl and xylazine, I don't think they understand the magnitude of the crisis. You know, many times I'll talk to people and they'll say, oh yeah, Paula, yeah, of course we know about fentanyl. But tell me what you know, because what you know never really compares to what the facts are. Yeah. As you, both of you know, the facts are, this is not an addict problem. As has been mentioned many, many times, fentanyl is affecting young children as young as 1 year old. You know, fentanyl is a poisoning. And in society today, or I can tell you here in Massachusetts, many of the folks will say to you, well, or even to the both of you, if they were on this call, well, it's an addict problem. No, it's not. Because the people that are getting fentanyl don't know they're getting it. They're being poisoned by it. Whether it's in a pill, whether it's in a gummy bear, whether it is in marijuana, as my son, or if in the vape pen, it is in coke, meth, fentanyl is in every single street drug across the United States today. Mm-hmm. And when we're losing 305 people a day to fentanyl poisoning across the United States and you hear nothing, I think that's a crisis.
Sure it is. Paula, first of all, I want to say this. You know, I've been doing this an awfully long time, and I am a recovering opiate addict. And I had a 23-year addiction to opiates, been clean now for 24 years. And the fact of the matter remains is, look, I say this with all the love in my heart I possibly can muster, okay? But I'm going to disagree with you just a little bit here, okay? It is an addict problem, but it is also the problem for the people that are not or unexpectedly getting this drug in their system.
Yes.
Once one becomes addicted to an opioid, first of all, if fentanyl were around when I got clean or when I was using, I wouldn't be sitting here today. I understand fentanyl. I understand xylazine. I understand everything else that they are lacing everything with here. I also own a treatment center. So it's another problem for us because now we have to detox on two drugs because those are two separate narcotics.
Right.
But when you are a fentanyl addict, like hundreds of thousands of people are today, because the thing we're not talking about in this society today, we are not talking about those amounts of emergency room visits that people were actually saved because of Narcan, but there is no place, there are no hospitals that are allowed, that are saying, hey folks, you can go here or you can go there, or hospitals aren't working with treatment centers in order to, because we've tried to do it with hospitals.
Right.
And as an opioid addict, And we always use Julian as kind of our benchmark. There's a young man named Julian who we can use his name, of course. And these guys would sit under the sign at one of our street corners here that said one pill can kill, right? And they would flip off the sign because they were intentionally buying fentanyl. When you get a drug that is that strong, you have to have that same drug, okay? It's when I was taking 70 to 80 Vicodin in the last 2 years of my using. If I got a Tylenol number 3, let's say, okay, I would down them. Absolutely, I would. Okay. But psychologically and even physically, that drug would not do it for me. I had to have the Vicodin or something stronger. So we're really wrestling with two issues here. We're wrestling with, of course, the poisonings. We are, and then we're wrestling with the addiction piece, because in our county systems, you have private treatment and you have county treatment. And with private treatment or PPOs and those with cash that can afford a treatment facility. The county programs, of course, are Medicaid, Medi-Cal, whatever the card is called in other parts of the country. And these county programs do not, I don't care what county it is in this country, these counties do not have enough beds to properly detox, to properly have the amount of time that an addict needs, all right, to at least start that journey of recovery.
Right.
So again, it's not that I'm totally disagreeing with you on this. There's just more sides to this story, okay? And you are 100% correct in saying that society doesn't get it. They don't understand it. They don't understand addiction. They don't understand what the combinations that are in fentanyl. They don't understand any of it. And that's sort of what our fight is here, is getting the right people to understand what addiction is and how, because guess what? It is doable. Recovery is possible. Abstinence is possible in all of this. So I just wanted to state that, but please go ahead, because again, we've had people that have worked here that have lost children, you know, and it's I would never put myself in a parent's shoes in this, you know, not ever.
Well, in those situations were much like Andrew's situation, a poisoning. We've had people that do not believe us when we've said, check where you're getting your marijuana from.
Or your cocaine.
Yeah, it's being laced.
Right.
Yes.
And they're like, why would anyone do that?
Right. 60% of cocaine, according to DEA today, 60% of all cocaine is laced with fentanyl. Yes. Why? You know, and again, those are the casual users on a Friday or Saturday night, whether you're 14 or 40, that are going out. Hey, they want to do a couple of bumps. They want to go dancing. They want to go to a party, whatever. And they wind up dead in 3 minutes. Yep. You know, that's the issue here. Yeah, it is.
Right. And I have to tell you, you know, I so appreciate you and I am so blessed to be able to be in your presence, because one of the things with me, and I'll tell you a little backstory to this, is when I received a call from the head detective in Annapolis, I won't tell you his name. He said to me, he said, you know, Mrs. Young, he said, I don't know what you expected. Did you expect a different outcome?
Whoa.
And at that moment and point in time, it's almost like the universe shifted.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and of course I won't swear on here, but I had a couple of choice words.
You can if you want to. let her fly.
And I said to him, I said, you know what? I said, how dare you? How dare you speak like that to a mother who just lost their child? And how dare you treat him? And even if he was an addict or substance abuse, he's a human being.
Yep.
What is wrong with you? And at that moment in time, I knew that my mission also had to be to understand the substance abuse community and the addiction community, because I'm going to be honest with you, I know nothing about it. Look, I knew nothing about fentanyl till I lost Andrew. Sure. Now I'm a freaking subject matter expert. All us parents are, and so are both of you. Right. And you know, sometimes it's having the tough conversations with people and saying, you know, and to me, you're right. We're not doing enough as a country. We're not doing enough as a society, because unfortunately, and I'm going to speak just on my state because I can speak on my state. They look at it as, oh, well, it's another junkie gone. Who cares?
That's right.
No, it's a human being. Right. That person had a family. They were a child to someone, a husband, whatever it is. Why do you keep thinking that's okay to talk like that?
Right. You know? They don't understand that. Look, and I know this is a line I've used a lot. People are probably tired of hearing it, and I don't care. Okay, but we didn't raise our hands and said we want to become drug addicts when we grow up. All right. We all came from somewhere. We all had a family. Sure, some were probably more blessed than others. Okay, that's life. That's just life.
Yeah.
But none of us want to crap in a doorway somewhere. None of us want to go through every day. You know, when I was doing 80 Vicodin a day, I had two jobs. My first job was to make sure I had enough pills for the day so I wouldn't go bad crazy. And then, of course, I had my career, you know, on top of that. So everything suffered, everything, including my family, including my work, all of it, my health, everything. And our mission here, again, is to, and I'm going to say it now because I keep telling people this, who, no matter who we have on our podcast, I will come to Massachusetts. I will explain to people what addiction is, how it affects us, how it affects our brains. I will give them the difference between addiction and somebody that got poisoned, because those are two totally different sides here to this story.
Yes.
And the poisoning parts of this, look, the other thing is this, and then I'm going to shut up. I really want to.
No, don't.
Okay. But I get on these rolls and Jason knows this.
Fired up for
it. Okay. I get fired up quickly here. When we talk, not we, but when our society, you know where I'm going with this, starts talking about long-term harm reduction, I want to run for the hills because I was on all of that. Okay. Yeah. We are not, and here's where I'm going with it. We are not offering people the right kind of treatment or giving them the option to say, do you want abstinence? Because why do we want to strap a 25-year-old to methadone for the rest of their life? Right. Okay. It's a trap. It's bullshit. It's out of there. But now there's another side to that. For the folks that have lost a child to this, there are people out there, and in our area as well, they just rave about long-term harm reduction because, you know, if we just kept her or him on methadone all of this time, maybe my child would still be alive. So my reaction to that is, how do I argue with that? Okay, because again, it's a human being, it's a child, it's parents. I won't put myself in their position. But when these long-term harm reductions don't understand addiction either. They don't know and they're not telling the addict or their families what the potential long-term health risks are to long-term harm reduction and how you are trapped and how you have to stay home because you have to get your medication every day and blah, blah, blah. And the story goes on and on. Okay. So what we do here is we try to get those messages across to everybody that, hey, there is a better way here. There are choices out there, but the longer you stay trapped in something, the harder it is going to become to step away from that medically assisted drug, okay, that everybody is trying to give you.
New Perceptions North, the premier drug and alcohol treatment and recovery center in Central California. A full continuum of medically supervised top quality care with programs for detox and patient residential treatment with dual diagnosis, intensive outpatient treatment, sober living support groups, and more. New Perceptions North provides adult men and women with the highest caliber of professional health care, treating each client with compassion and respect. In a safe, comfortable environment to begin the process of recovery to proudly create and sustain a life without addiction. Call 559-978-1507 or visit newperceptionsnorth.com.
And if I could, I would love to have you explain the difference of addiction and of overdose and poisoning. And the reason is because I was just at an event last week. And there was a doctor there from one of the really top hospitals here in Boston. And he continued to call all of this an overdose. And I said to him, I said, with all due respect, you can't do that because my son did not overdose on marijuana. Right. He was given it by someone he knew. The person told him he got it at the dispensary, which obviously he did not. And then when I got the medical examiner report, which I actually even keep a copy on my phone, which is terrible, it showed fentanyl and xylazine. It showed both. So for you to sit here as a professional that you are from a big hospital from Boston to say that everybody is lumped together is wrong of you.
It is.
And if you could, I would love to have you kind of give the difference out there to everyone, because when I put this on my website, I want people to hear it from someone like you, so they can stop debunking people like me, which they love to do, including to debunk that, well, no, your son didn't pass away from the marijuana being laced because that can't happen.
Yeah. Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
Because on the medical examiner, it has three things. It has marijuana, fentanyl, xylazine. That's it.
Yeah.
So do you want to go fight with a doctor? Go ahead, because it can happen and it is.
Yeah. If I could get pissed off real quick, Clint, as I do. All right. Here's one of the big effing things too, Paula, that pisses me off is, look, we know many medical professionals, but it's what, 15-16%, something like that, that even get addiction medicine training, let alone to become a specialist, is even smaller.
Correct.
So sometimes the pompousness comes out. I went to all this medical school and I know and every, no, you don't. No, you don't. And just because you maybe read a journal or two doesn't qualify you either. Now, if you're someone that you've been in there, you've studied it, you've worked in treatment, you've been through the, it's like there, sometimes people don't know their effing lane enough.
Right.
And I'm sorry that was said to you because they're wrong.
They're wrong. Okay. They are wrong. Look, as an opiate addict, we really don't care if we overdose or not. It's not on our top list of things to do. All right. But when we have, we always, because these drugs build a tolerance in our bodies, we constantly have to have more and more. I didn't start out taking 80 Vicodin. I started taking them as prescribed, 2 every 4 hours, 2 every 6 hours, whatever it is. You can become dependent on an opioid in about 10 days. And I'm talking about a Norco, a Vicodin, a Percocet. Fentanyl, it's more like 5 to 7 days you can become dependent and addicted. Now, that doesn't make everybody a full-blown drug addict where you're out stealing stuff and you're crapping in the street and robbing people and all that sort of thing, okay? But when you are in that phase of your addiction, we know that 2 milligrams of fentanyl is the deadly dose.
Yes.
We will take it up to that 2 milligrams. We will even go over that 2 milligram mark because we are also searching the high. It's called chasing the high.
Right.
And people don't understand how we think that way. Again, doctors don't understand it. Lawmakers don't understand it. Families don't understand it. Why would we put this drug first? Because we have to. Mm-hmm. Our body is requiring it. And we will do anything on God's green earth to stop the withdrawal symptoms. Because they are brutal, they are violent, they are ugly, they are pathetic. It is a nightmare. I can't explain it any deeper than that, okay? So again, as the addict, we're going to just take it as far as we can. Because when you are living that life, and I've been there more than times than I can count, there are worse things than death. Because of our lifestyle, because of what we're doing, because of what we're doing to our families, okay? Now, that doesn't even get into the brain piece of this. Okay, where our dopamine receptors are gone, our serotonin levels are gone.
The brain is totally shifted into the survival mode.
Correct.
That fight, flight, freeze, and in the trauma space and the things like consequence and learning from that, that's where people don't understand where, especially with the long-term harm reduction that we have such great concern, the brain's overly not going to know. So you're not going to be able to be pulled to a point where it starts to work with logic. Like, oh my God, this is a poison. Like for me, primarily alcohol, I see someone drinking and I go, I don't get why they're poisoning themselves.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's that aspect of it too. And so when it comes to the poisoning aspect, such as with Andrew, gosh, how many people have we known that, my kid suffered from anxiety. They didn't want to speak up about it. So they bought what they thought was a Xanax and they're gone. They were never an addict. It was the first time they ever used any kind of pill.
Right. And that's not an overdose.
Right.
That's not an overdose. An overdose is if I'm taking 70 pills a day and tomorrow I decide to take 100.
Right.
That's an overdose. And by the way, this one's going to blow you away a little bit. Okay. Was it intentional or not? Sometimes it is.
Right. And see, and that's the other aspect of all of this. And I'm sure you both know is the justice that doesn't come to the parents because and, and I will say this in all respectfulness, I am a partner with the DEA here in the New England region. I do a lot with them and I wholly respect what they're doing. But the problem with them, and I say this right to them, you guys continue to go for the shark.
Yep.
You go for the shark. But what about Steve, who just gave Susie a gummy bear? And now Susie's gone.
Right.
You did nothing with Steve, but now Steve is still out giving people gummies and pills and meth and whatever he wants. But you just care about the shark.
Here's why. We have the same issue in California, right? Because obviously there's two sides of the aisle. There's the left and there's the right. And the only way the right, the Republican side, can get anything passed here, that it has to start with, just like we just did. All right, we just had a law passed. I think it's 23.7 grams, something like that. Then our then our district attorney can charge them with murder, or manslaughter. They have to start up there, because if you just go in and because we're overrun by the left. And so every time you go in to say, hey, we want to get, you know, Mark Smith over here, okay, because he gave a gummy to Susie Smith, all right, it's just not going to work. It's not that they don't want to, okay? It's not that law, or not that the prosecutors don't want to. They can't. They're being held up by our state legislature here, your state legislature in Massachusetts. That's kind of the layman's explanation of why that doesn't happen. Okay. And it's going to be a long fight. It's not going to be in my lifetime that we're going to probably see anything like that, you know? So now comes the education piece. Yeah. But if we're going to educate, because in my opinion, we've done a great job in this country. I really believe this so far of getting the awareness piece out there. All right. Even though there's still people out there that don't want to listen to it and they don't want to hear it, or they claim they don't know about it. I mean, we've got signs everywhere. We got them everywhere. Right. But if we're not addressing both sides of this, and we're not addressing the treatment side of this to anybody. All right.
Right.
And it's killing the generations that are behind us. It's going to kill the generations that are coming up, right? Because we're simply not tackling the right issues here. You know, we're just not. And it's a shame. It's the crying shame. Okay, that people, whether it's a police officer, whether it's your neighbor, whether it's your pastor, I don't care who it is, that says, what did you expect? It's yeah. Like, brother, dude, what is wrong with your ass? Okay, again, it's because of the lack of the proper education.
Yes.
We just can't go in and say, don't do fentanyl. That doesn't work anymore.
Don't do drugs.
Don't do drugs. It does not work. But we have lost. We've lost the war on drugs, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I don't want to. But we're slowly losing the war on recovery.
But you know what? It's interesting, because I was talking to someone and they said, I don't even call it a war on drugs, because, and this was someone who was in the military. He said, you know why, Paula? Because wars end.
Yeah, good point.
And this has not. And I'm like, right. Wow. I never even thought of it like that.
I didn't think of that either.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And I'm like, you're right. He goes, because if you look back, this has been going on for 50, 60, 70 years. And if people think that this is going to go away, it's not.
Right.
It's every time there's something, you know, because as both of you know, it was the meth at one time.
Yep.
And then it was the coke. And then it was, you know, the pills coming in. And now it's not just the marijuana, but it's the gummy bears and the vape pens and 8-year-olds starting to smoke marijuana and vape pens. So it's not going to stop unless, like you said, the issue is tackled. And right now, no one is tackling the issue. You know why? And I have no problem saying what I'm about to say. I don't care who's listening. We unfortunately are in a society where people will sit here and say, well, Paula, it's the Republicans. They're not listening.
Right.
Well, Paula, it's the Democrats. They're not listening. You know what? I don't give an F. How about you do your job? How about that?
Yeah.
Because you're put in office to do a job. I have told my folks here, whether it's senators, congressmen, or state representatives, I've said to them, you were put in a position to do your job. You are not doing your job. Because if I could write effing legislation, I would do it myself and pass the damn legislation that should be passed. How about that?
It should not be a bipartisan issue at all.
No, it's because, you know, I'm going to quote Derek Maltz, which I'm sure you both know him very well. He says it all the time. This is not a Republican or Democratic issue. This is a United States of America issue. This is a humanitarian issue. A whole generation is being wiped out.
Correct.
And no one is blinking an eye. Maybe in California, you have a lot of signage. If I fly you here to Massachusetts, you're going to be like, holy shit, Paula. Do you all not think fentanyl's happening? Oh, really? No, of course not. We have no signage. There is no one doing anything about this.
There is money available in every state for awareness.
Really? Well, let me tell you what's happening here in Massachusetts.
I want to hear this one.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Because I'm ready to jump on a plane right now. Okay.
Come on down. Well, I'll take you to a Red Sox game.
Beautiful. So, yes, the big green wall.
Yes, the green monster. So what's happening here, and I'm sure in many other states, is all of the money that is now being brought in from the Sackler opioid settlement funds, as they call it,
yep,
is now being given to these treatment centers. Okay. The treatment centers are saying, Paula, I don't need to work with you. We already talk about this. No, you don't. You don't talk about it the way I do.
Right.
You hand out a pamphlet and you say, just like the both of you said, don't do fentanyl. And that's it. That's the end of the day. Case closed. Here's a pamphlet. Come and see us. You're not tackling the problem, because I might not have substance abuse. I don't know what that is like. I am sorry for you, but I'm glad you're doing well. I'm going to keep the prayers going. But you know what I do know is that it starts at home. It doesn't start telling Susie, Tom, Larry, and Mo, you got to come to this center for us to help you. How about you go to them at the kitchen table and you talk to them and you talk to their family and you work it from the point of where it should be? That's not happening. And for you to sit here and say, I will not tell you who, but there is people in our state who will say to the both of you, this is not really as bad of a serious issue as you're making it out to be.
Since 2000, we've lost more people in the Vietnam War.
Right.
Oh,
right.
But it's not a problem to them. It's not. I'm making this more than what it is.
If you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, please call PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, at 559-579-1551 or visit us online at painnonprofit.org. Follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at PAIN Nonprofit. And please subscribe to the Don't Hide the Scars podcast and share with others wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. And if you would like to donate to PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, please click the link in the description to make your tax-deductible donation today and help us save more lives gripped by addiction.
You know, Paul, I went to Betty Ford in 2001. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that was my third treatment center, and I was a train wreck. And I'm standing out there around the little pyramid smoking section that we had. All right. And I'm standing there, and we called them the Mod Squad. There were three kids that came in from the Massachusetts area, because in 2001, yeah, OxyContin was in Massachusetts and all up and down the Eastern Seaboard. It was here, but I hadn't even heard of it. So, right. So I'm standing there, and these three 18-year-olds come in from Massachusetts. True story. And one kid looks at me and he goes, what's your drug of choice? I said, pain pills, Vicodin, you know, whatever. And anything I could shove in my system or up my butt, I would do it, you know. And I look at this kid and I go, what's your drug? He goes, Oxy. I go, what's that? And he goes, you've never heard of OxyContin? I go, no. I never heard of it. He starts explaining it to me. Now, I waited 7 more years before I started what I'm doing now, but right. I've done my research. I mean, big time research into Oxy, into the Sacklers, into Purdue, into all of it. Okay. And that's basically where it got started, up and down the Eastern Seaboard, you know. But again, it's just I can't understand how there's no money for any of that in Massachusetts. But I kind of get it a little bit, and here's why. Why I might get a letter from this.
All right, fire it up.
Here we go. There was $6 million allotted by Governor Newsom. I'll just say Newsom. I don't even want to call him governor. By Newsom for several counties in California for awareness. I worked with several agencies during that time period, helping them, giving them my expertise, blah, 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 all of this. And then the money got increased, I believe, 9 million. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. The point of the story is we didn't get a nickel of that money. That money went to the county entities.
Yeah.
Okay. So when I say there's money out there available, most of that money is not going to go to the private nonprofits that are busting their asses, probably more than some of the county programs are.
Yeah.
And have been doing it longer, right? We didn't see any of that.
Yeah.
You know, So that money gets funneled in so many different ways.
That by the end, when it actually maybe to help anyone, what, 10% of it?
There's another county here in the San Joaquin Valley that there's a $35 million budget available again for awareness. $35 million. Do you know what? Give $1 million for the awareness. Or 5 million, I don't care, okay? And give 30 million to somebody to help somebody.
Right.
You know what I could do with $30 million and scholarship people into treatment?
Oh, yeah.
That's a solution. Nobody's offering solutions, but that's a solution.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it is, and you just hit the nail on the head, is there's no solutions. It just continues to be the problem. It continues to be their part of the problem. You know, it continues to be where, you know, I'm on many coalitions and many committees, including for the state, and I constantly hear twice a month, oh, well, there's all this money, there's this grant, there's this, there's that, for nonprofits like you who are boots on the ground, grassroots movement, for your advocacy and awareness. And that has to be your health department that has to tell. Well, what if the health department isn't giving out that information?
That's right.
Because the health department has their friends who they decide to disseminate it to. So now I'm going to flip it back and I'm going to ask, Who's taking accountability for this? Because I can tell you that what I used to do prior to losing my son, I was an HR executive. And you want to talk about checks and balances? I know all about that.
You bet.
I worked for billion-dollar corporations. So when I throw things in the face of the state now, and they're like, you know, Paula, holy shit. Well, yeah, because if you're giving $2 million to this city, and you're telling them they have to work with people like me for the advocacy and awareness and prevention, and they're not doing it, then I'm sorry, then you should be taking the money back.
There it is.
Plain and simple. Because if it was a corporation, they'd be done. They'd be fired. They'd be probably up for many different laws that have been broken. And accountability is all about, it's all over the place. So why isn't that being done now? So right. Now you look at, you know, you talk about OxyContin, and I think about Ed Bish. I don't know if you've had him on. Ed is amazing. So Ed Bish is a dad. He lost his son, and Ed is on the forefront of the Sackler and what's happening. For 20 years, he has been fighting this fight, and Ed is amazing, and he will break down everything to you and what's happened in court. And Ed is the one and his team who have now brought this to the Supreme Court, because the Sacklers have faced no accountability. Here we go again, billionaires.
Right.
You know, and this is the problem, is that we're living in a world where they look at both of you and say, well, that's great that you guys are good now, but you don't need anything. That's not the case, because you always need it. You know, I say to people all the time, being kind is free. Giving compassion is free. Giving someone a hug is free. You don't need money for that. And you don't have to be a, you don't always have to be a jackass. You know, kindness goes a long way. And one thing that when I talk to kids, whether they're in high school, I talk to a lot of high school kids. I remember one event I was doing, I was at a speaking engagement and it was about over 100 people. And it was at the YMCA. It was all the YMCAs for my area. And there was two kids there in particular. I have a video that I show. And they were looking at their phone and they were laughing. And I stopped talking and I looked right at them. I said, do you want to come and talk? Because I'll stop and you can come and tell us what you're talking about.
I've done that. That's great.
And everyone just stops and they look at me. And the directors, the three directors there, they knew me because Andrew used to be part of the YMCA. And he's like, you think I'm telling you shit? I know her. She's And those kids at the end came up to me and asked if they could give me a hug and apologized and said, I am so sorry.
Yeah.
I did not mean to do that. And I am sorry that you lost your son. And sometimes it's all in the message. It's how you relay the message to people. It's not the yelling and the screaming.
Right.
And, you know, and I've seen it before, you know, F Biden and this administration sucks. Look, they all suck. Okay. If you want to ask me, they also, because I have Republicans here in Massachusetts that have done a lot for me. And in the last couple events I've had, they don't even show up.
Right.
Because they're running for Senate. Well, that's more important now. So, dude, do you understand that if I open my mouth, you're not going to get in Senate? Maybe I need to run and take your seat. How about that?
Right.
And this is the thing, is that they don't understand, or they, it's not that they don't understand. It's, I'm going to quote a representative here that said to me, Paula, you need to understand that every time I walk into the State House in Boston, and I see my colleagues, they all know about fentanyl. They know what fentanyl is doing in their communities and towns. They know the devastation. They see the numbers just like you do, but they don't want to put their name to it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
How disgusting is that?
Yeah. I'm going to give you just one more little disgusting one. So
that's ironic. We were talking about this very thing today
Exactly. Assemblyman Jim Patterson here in our area, who we just adore. All right. He has been a champion for fentanyl change in not only for the drug dealers, but for treatment for everything.
He's understood addiction due to family member.
Correct. And he says that
Flint saved his family member's life. I'll give you the kudos because I know you won't pat your own back,
thank
but
you.
I will.
Okay. And so he presented this bill, which I helped him on 5 years ago. And I'll shorten it up a little bit, but we went up to Sacramento. It never even got out of Public Health and Safety Committee, right? Never even got out of Public Health and Safety. We walked out of there and I said, I looked at him. I said, Jim, I said, now I understand what you're up against up here. Okay. Now let's just, and by the way, he didn't give up. He kept trying and doing stuff. Right. And this year, just several months ago, of course, now we have a Democrat, Assemblywoman Soria, who takes the same bit, his bill, verbatim. She gets it. She did ask Jim to co-author it, which was decent of her, but it was on the heels of Jim saying, hey, that's kind of, she's new, right, in the assembly. And he said, look, this is what we do. Okay. And so she brought him in, but it was, Paul, I'm not kidding you. It was the exact wording passed with flying colors because she's a Democrat. I was up there during those votes. I was addressing the Public Health and Safety Committee when, you know, every Democrat voted no and every Republican voted yes. And of course, we only had three Republicans. It didn't pass.
Well, a lot of that sway, too, is that we're seeing it now in California. Finally, they're willing to address public safety, but they're not pinning their name to it so much because it's like,
right.
That would be an acknowledgement like, hi, we failed you.
Right.
Sorry. So we're seeing that shift with it going on, but a lot of it, yeah, it's done in this really weird way that most of these people have someone nipping at their heels.
Sure.
that is speaking up about it, and they're realizing, oh, I'm going to lose my office if I don't actually address this.
Right.
Finally.
Right.
And that's exactly it, because I think, you know, and I'm not going to say that every person here is terrible, because they're not. There are some really wonderful Congress folks and senators and state reps that have been very kind and very helpful of my mission, what I'm doing, what we're doing with Achieve Greatness. But, you know, again, it's like, it's kind of like going up that the river, and the river is rough. You know, it's like you get to that rock and you're good, but then you know you got to go up again. And that's what it's like. And, you know, I was just in Washington, D.C. on April 16th for the special congressional hearing on China Communist Party. And, you know, I was personally invited, and I loved the fact that I was invited and I was there. And one of the things that everybody found out prior to that meeting is that China is giving tax exemptions to people who are selling fentanyl right in, from China to America. They're giving them tax exemptions. And, you know, now here you have a panel of congressmen and women, you know, from many different states who are sitting there listening to this, and they're like, holy shit. And we're like, we already knew this. This is not new to
us. This is not news. No,
this is not breaking. Like, how about you tell us, what is the action plan that you're going to do to move legislation forward? Because you keep depending on us parents, the grassroots movement parents, to do everything, and you do nothing, but yet you keep demanding of us. Well, how about now we ask you, what are you going to do? Because we can't write those legislations. We can't go into the Senate chambers. You can. So either you're going to come to the table and work with us, or get the hell out of the way, because we don't have the time. You know, we continue to lose people every day. You said it yourself, more than all wars. All right. And right now, fentanyl is the number one killer, as both of you know, in 18 to 45.
Yep.
And that's, you know, and I know you guys have the billboards in California, because that was put up by Families Against Fentanyl, Jim Rawl, which I love Jim. He's amazing. And he's been on this battle since he lost his son, Tommy, in 2015. And he'll tell you the battle wounds that he has, because he, you know, he's trying to classify fentanyl a weapon of mass destruction, which, well, it should be, because it's a chemical. Yeah. And it's a synthetic chemical that is killing people. But so far, you have one person, one in all of the United States who has done that. And that's Governor Youngkin from Virginia. No one else has done it. You know, here in Massachusetts, we had a congressman who put forth, it's called the Fentanyl Halt Act, 467. I'll send it to the both of you. Please. It passed Congress, but now it's sitting in the Senate. You know, I had a meeting not too long ago with the chair of the Massachusetts Mental Health and Substance Abuse. And I said to him, I said, Senator, what's going on with this bill? Why the hell is it sitting? What are you talking about? I'm sorry. Does one hand not talk to the other? Like, how do you all, like, how do you all work? Because how do I know about this and you don't?
Right. Right.
And this is the problem that I continue to see over and over and over. Or it's, you know, they'll sit there and they'll say to you, we hear you.
Right.
But right now the congressman can't, meet with you. So the aide is going to meet with you, or the senator can't meet with you because the aide is going to meet with you.
Heard because that so many times.
Yeah. Because they're traveling. Or they're going to Ukraine, or they're doing this, or they're doing that. Well, that's great and well and good. I will never take away from, first of all, I don't believe in war. I hate it. But I'm also not stupid, okay? The only reason war happens is because of all the money that's made off of it. Let's wake up.
Yeah.
And you know what? We're in Ukraine. Why? Well, all you have to do is look on Google and you'll see all the pharmaceutical companies that we own there.
Sure. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting too, on the China thing, you know, this does not take rocket science to try to figure this out. Yeah. You know, obviously China had an opium problem back in the 1800s that the Brits actually started, and got China high as a kite. Right. And China decided to, you know, basically lock up all the addicts and kill all the drug dealers is what they did. They solved their problem pretty damn fast. Now, I'm not promoting that for the world to hear, okay? But China, they are systematic. They are surgical. They do things in 50-year increments, 100-year increments. They haven't forgotten about that little piece back in 1870 or whatever the hell it was. They are coming after us. They are doing it the right way. They, like I said, they're like surgeons, okay? They are strategically lining this up, all right, to put us out of commission.
Yes.
Period. And as I say, we can shove a missile up a camel's ass from 5,000 miles away. But what? We can't walk across the border, okay? And tell the president of Mexico, listen, dude, okay, you got one choice here. You're going to let us come in, and we're going to work with you, and we're going to try to stop this. Now, we're never going to stop everything, but damn it, we could definitely put a big dent in it if we wanted to.
Oh, you ever hear of the book The Art of War?
Oh yeah.
Sun Tzu.
Enough said.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I gotcha.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to ask you a question.
Yes, absolutely. Anything.
I
when can you come out here? Because that's the next thing I'm gonna ask the both of you.
Anytime. Anytime. Seriously. You just let us know. Okay. We're there. I'm not joking. Okay.
You know, I would love to have you both come to an event that I'm doing in August, August 17th. It's actually a memorial tournament for my son. Basketball, of course.
I was going to say, if it's golf, I'll be there a week before.
Listen, I'm trying to do a golf one too. But it's interesting because everyone will tell you that knows me, including my husband, I know nothing about sports. I absolutely suck. So when we put this together with the compound that we're putting it at, because they have 6 courts, it's actually someone where my son used to be the coach for, the AAU coach. You know, he said to me, he said, Paula, do you want 3-on-3 or do you want a 5-court press? I'm like, do you mean only 3 players on the court? Like, what are you telling me? And like, can you talk to me in English? So they laugh every time. But, you know, I think what's important is that people understand that parents like myself, all we're looking for is we're looking for someone to say, you know, here's the seat at the table. Here's what we're going to do together. And we're going to make it, we're going to do something opposed to doing absolutely nothing.
Now, here's something else that I would like to, I'll tell you now, and we can talk about it at another time as well. What I started 14 years ago was a parent support group.
Oh, I love that.
Now we've had it for 14 years. Okay. Every Wednesday night, I bet I could count the number of time on both hands I've missed in 14 years. But this support group, it's not a grief group. Okay. But it's a support group for parents. And we have parents that have lost children that come to this, that continue to come to this, to support those parents that are going through the addiction process with their kids or loved ones right now. And I'm sure you've heard of Al-Anon and all of that. And okay. And I'm an Al-Anon fan to a certain degree. I'm a fan of Celebrate Recovery. I'm a fan of all of them, but in ours, we do it totally different. A, I'm there. B, we crosstalk. We throw it out there. I'm the addict. I'm the one in long-term recovery. I tell them what to expect, what not to expect, what you can do, what you can't do, on and on and on. We've got parents. We, like I said, crosstalk. We laugh. We cry. We bitch. We moan. Okay. We do it all in there. And let me tell you something. We're actually going to be starting another chapter in Southern California as well here in the next few months. But these parent meetings have been instrumental in not only helping the parents that their kids are addicted but still alive, but they're also viable in helping the families that have lost a child. And I would be more than happy, okay, to sit and talk to you about that, about trying to get one started. And I mean, I got a list of stuff, okay, that we would
I would love that, because I think one of the biggest things that people don't understand about parents like myself is, you know, we are a different beast. We are different people now. We're not the people that we were prior to losing our child. And, you know, one of the things I say all the time, and I'm going to quote one of my moms from Ohio who lost her daughter, Angie. She's a paramedic and former firefighter. And she says it all the time. She says, you know, Angie and Andrew's death, their legacy will not be how they passed away, but how many lives they're about to save. Right. And that's so true. Because I can tell you in my path, I have come across so many amazing, amazing people from, you know, Marla and Diane, who are in Ohio, to Andrea Thomas, who's in Denver, you know, to so many others, to my family in New Hampshire and Jennifer in Texas. I mean, I could go on and on and on, and even my dad's. And one of the things that you learn about this army is we have nothing but love and compassion,
right?
Because that's what our world is now. Right. And we will do anything to help someone and to truly be there for them and really be there in the present sense because of what we've suffered. I mean, don't get me wrong. You also don't want to cross us because we're the wrong ones, but,
right.
But as you know, but at the same time, we're also the people that, you know, have nothing but compassion. And that's why with me here in Massachusetts and with Achieve Greatness, that's one of the biggest things is turning tragedy into purpose.
Yeah.
You know, we're focusing on the kids. We're focusing on the kids that can't afford the basketball camps. We're paying for it. We're making sure that when the kids are coming to a basketball camp, they're also hearing about the dangers of every street drug out there today and to make good choices. And, you know, if you need to speak to a counselor, you need to speak to someone, we're going to have the path for you for that. You know, we become mentors to you, kind of like my son was doing with the kids that he was coaching. And, you know, and then of course, working on legislation, that's been the hardest thing. My husband, if he were here, he would tell you he leaves the politics to me because he hates it.
Right.
And even sometimes with the politics, as I'm sure both of you know, you just want to hit your head up on a wall because it's like, okay, is anybody there? Are they even listening?
Right.
But you can't stop because the moment you stop is the moment that, you know, it's like there was someone said to me, the moment you stop talking about them is the moment their story ends.
Mm-hmm.
And we will always make sure that their story will never end. And that's who we are for the rest of our lives.
Right, right. And I'm just going to add one thing to that. You are absolutely correct. Look, none of us that are doing this, we all have that compassion piece. You know, it's because we're lucky to be sitting here ourselves. You know, we want to be able to pass that on. But it's also about truth. It's about it. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you have to get mad at it. Okay. Sometimes it's like my addiction. Sometimes I still get mad at my former addiction. Mm-hmm. All right. And the damage that it caused and the people that I harmed and all of that, even though I've been forgiven for an awful lot, you know, that still doesn't pop up in my head from time to time. Of course it does. But I also want people to know that this didn't define your son. This didn't, my addiction doesn't define me. It doesn't define any of us out there. You know, and so people need to realize that. And the only way you get that across is by beating it in their heads. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Exactly.
It is.
No, it is, but it's also talking about it because, you know, again, with so many of the parents that I've come across, including, and I'm thinking about Amanda right there in California, who I was just on the phone with before I was talking to you. And then there's Jill in Virginia. Jill lost her brother, you know, and then people don't talk about that. They don't talk about the sibling loss. They don't talk about the grandparent losing the grandchild or the kids who now are being raised by the grandparent because the parents are now gone.
Right.
Or what about the parents? And I can think of Shelly, who's in Georgia. She lost her son, Tariq, from a pill, never taken anything. And then 6 months later, loses her son, Eric, because he killed himself, because he lost his brother.
Right.
These are the things that are not being talked about.
Correct.
And these are the things that when I speak, I talk about them.
Absolutely.
And I bring them to the forefront, to the politicians, to the legislators, because they need to hear this. They need to hear that it's not just Paula in front of your face, there's a lot more that comes with Paula and all of these other families. And all we're looking for is to say, you know, what can we do? How can we help? That's all we're looking for. We're not looking for a handout. We're not looking for, you know, someone to come and say, here's a $50 billion check. No, we're looking for someone to say, here's your seat at the table. Let's work together.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. But we're heard. They're hearing us.
They're hearing us. But I want to ask one question before we close. When the pot that he was given, what was the fentanyl put on?
So the fentanyl was actually sprayed on the joint. So what it was is it was sprayed on the joint and it was sprayed in the leaves. And that's exactly what's happening today, is that they're spraying the leaves and they're spraying the actual joint. So then when you put the joint to your mouth to light it up, you've got the fentanyl and you're done. And then when you actually start to inhale it, because you don't know what's happening, is then when you get the xylazine and whatever else they've put in it. And that's how they're doing it. And there's more and more cases that are coming up like this. Because, you know, because I will tell you, very quickly, because I know we're almost over, but there will people who will sit there and they will say, Paula, that can't happen because once fentanyl hits a certain degree of temperature, you know, the fentanyl disseminates. Well, that's bullshit.
Okay.
That is bullshit, because I will give you get Jim Rawl, Families Against Fentanyl, on your podcast, and he will debunk every single person that says that bullshit. And I'll bring you medical examiners and people from the district attorney's offices across the country that will also tell you that that's BS. Those are the people who don't want to believe that it's happening. And those are the people that want to continue that it can't happen. I mean, I had someone say to me, well, you shouldn't say that your son passed away like that because that's not the truth. I'm sorry. What? Oh, okay. So then you know the truth? Because I have a documentation from a doctor that tells me how I lost my child. But you know the truth.
Hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
And remember, here's the other thing for you both to think about. The cities and towns are making a lot of money off of marijuana.
Absolutely they are.
Oh, yeah.
And I say this all the time. I am not going after I'm not going after the marijuana industry. All I'm doing is telling people to go to the dispensary and not the street. Because if you go to the street, and you both know this, especially being in California, you're not coming home.
Right.
Yeah.
You're not coming home.
Yeah.
Can you say, you know, look, and the reason why I asked that is because seriously, 6 months ago, I believe that. Right. And then somebody told me, and it was somebody reputable. It wasn't, you know, some somewhere, you know, they said, no, they said that they believe that once you light it, then basically once it's lit, then it just evaporates type of a thing. So I want to make sure, because I always thought that that was the case. So
yes.
can you send me some info on some of that? Do you have any that you can send me?
Absolutely.
That would be
great. What I'll do is I'll send you the info of the person we were just talking about so you can connect with him, because he would be someone to have, because he is literally, I mean, he did not go to college, but I swear to you, I tell people all the time, he's a chemical scientist. This man can break down like no one I've ever seen. From someone at Harvard, he doesn't need a freaking degree, and he is the best of the best, and he can hang with anybody. And again, that is the problem that's happening, is that you have people who are sitting here saying, yeah, but when you light it up, but what they're not remembering is if it's on the joint and you put it to your mouth and you're lighting it up, you've already, the fentanyl is already in your system. What are you not remember? You know, because when they found my son, unfortunately, he had more than half of the joint left. Whoa. That's what the police officers told us, and that's what was in the report. Of course that happened, because with fentanyl, as you both know, it puts you to sleep.
Right.
And you just never wake up.
Right.
So, yeah. And he was smoking it because, one thing we didn't touch upon, but he had mental health. He had PTSD from a previous car accident and anxiety from that car accident. And mental health is another thing that no one talks about and we're not doing enough with.
Sure.
You know, so when someone sits there and says, oh, well, you know, they're just going to smoke because they feel like it. Well, maybe, but sometimes they have the card and they're smoking it because of other reasons. So don't put everybody again in the same category.
Right.
I agree. Well, I do want to say, and I'm seeing the Kobe Bryant book back there, which I'm a huge Lakers fan. And I have a feeling Andrew and I would have gotten along really well. I'm 6'3". I tried to play college basketball. It's kind of like, you know, I played against NBA players, and it was really clear that I had reached my limit. But
and you know what? And here's really something weird. You didn't even know that that was Andrew's book.
I had a feeling.
And you just said it, and that's exactly whose book it was.
Yeah, I had a feeling. I had a feeling. And I just want to say with Achieve Greatness that it is a part of that necessary solution. As I will always say, the one of the greatest component for somebody in life in general and for good mental health, you know, let alone prosperity and recovery, is that connectivity in a place that you can go and you're accepted and you can tell people care about you. So I'm just want to say thank you for keeping it going and grateful for it. And I know it's going to continue to change a lot of young men and women's lives that have a place to go. They may not love basketball, but they've got a place to go and they love that. So thank you.
Yeah.
You bet.
And we're venturing out to other sports. And I always tell people, if anybody wants to look us up, you know, it's Achieve Greatness, the number 88.org. And people have asked me, what does 88 stand for? Because that's when Andrew was born, 1988. So that's what that stands for. And, you know, and I'm not going to stop. I mean, I've been battle wounded. You know, I've lost a child. And like I tell people, I'm doing this to save you.
Yep.
All of the parents like myself that I named and so many others, we're doing this to save your life because we don't want you to live our nightmare.
Right. Yeah. Right. No, that's exactly it. Paula, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. This was lovely. I feel like I want to talk to you like every day now.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? We'll give you our emails, my cell number. Seriously, we'll give it all to you. So hopefully we can do something here together in the future. Like I said, we're willing to come and talk to folks and let them know what the real deal is. And any way we can help, just like I said, just let us know, Paula.
Absolutely. And I'll get that information over to you. And again, thank you so, so much, the both of you, and great, great job with your recovery. And yes, when you come, I promise I will take you. I don't know how to golf. I'll hit you, but I will take you golfing.
That's perfect. Thank you so much.
It was lovely talking to the both of you. Thank you so, so much again. And we will definitely stay in touch.
If you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, please call PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, at 559-579-1551 or visit us online at painnonprofit.org. Follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at PAIN Nonprofit. And please subscribe to the Don't Hide the Scars podcast and share with others wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. And if you would like to donate to PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, please click the link in the description to make your tax-deductible donation today and help us save more lives gripped by addiction.